Well, as I told you when I was introducing the scriptures, I had a hard time deciding where my focus would be today, because really focusing on the new creation and people living in a world of equality where if you built a house, you got to live in it. If you grew some food, you got to eat that food, where abundance was the way of living. It was kind of tempting, but I could not ignore, especially in the world we live in right now, the passage from Luke and the disaster, the feeling of dread, the feeling of a world collapsing. It just needed to be spoken to. So the passage began with the disciples admiring the beauty of the temple, and we have to understand just how incredible that temple was. It was on the site of where Solomon had built the first temple, where David had mapped it out, and then that temple had been destroyed as the people were taken into exile, and when they came back, they rebuilt a temple. But then when the Romans came to take over this land, Herod decided that Jerusalem would be the jewel of the East, and he would create the most beautiful city. And in the center of that city would be the crown jewel, the temple. And he built a massive place with stones way bigger than the stones used in the pyramids. And they faced all these stones with white gleaming marble and put up gold ornaments here and there all over, so that if you were sitting on the hills around Jerusalem, that gleaming temple would be where your eyes were drawn to. It was incredible. It was also, of course, the center of the Hebrew, the Jewish religion. This is where they gathered to learn and to be a community. And so it meant so much to these people. And what does Jesus tell them? Tell his disciples? He says that the time will come when not a single stone of this glorious temple will be left standing. Unbelievable. It would be like saying that Grace Church is just going to be a pile of rubble tomorrow. It went right to their core. It meant so much to them. So they say, when is this terrible thing going to happen? How will we know? And Jesus goes on to paint this terrible picture of what can happen in the world. What does happen in the world? There are earthquakes, there are famines, there are times of disease where people die in droves. Terrible things will happen. It is the way of the world. But you are to carry on. This is the message in this passage. But they are, of course, focused on these terrible things that are going to happen. It's kind of paralyzing, isn't it? When you know that the world is going to fall down around you. We kind of feel it ourselves, don't we? We have all these things going on in our world. We have climate emergency, economic gloom and doom, global power shifts. We've got drug deaths and gun crimes. We've got terrorist threats. We've got single-use plastics cluttering up our seas and our oceans. We're running out of fish. Where do I stop? It's just, I guess we just let it all happen and give up. It just makes you feel so powerless, doesn't it? You just don't know where to begin. Well, Jesus recognizes that in all times, these are the challenges that we face. We always face challenges because that is the world. But he goes on to tell the disciples, these things will happen, and this is what's going to happen to you. You will be pulled out in front of the tribunal in the synagogue. You will be tried for following me. You will be thrown into prison. You will be reviled and rejected. But not a hair on your head will be harmed. And he says to them, this will be your time when you can spread the good news. This is your opportunity to speak out, to be disciples, to be apostles, to speak about God's way. It's the disciples' own journey of faith that he's talking about. Don't look outward into what's going on in the world that is so wrong. Look within. Look within yourselves and find the strength that God gives you to speak up and to talk about God's way in this world. Move forward. Move ahead. Trust in God. Follow God's way. Speak up. And be leaders, for you know where you're going. You know what this is all about. Do we know where we're going? Do we know what it's all about? This would be a really good time for us to do a little time travel and go ask Jesus to help us, to talk to us, to tell us what we should do. We're going to do this. Time travel is really easy. You just close your eyes for an instant. It takes no time at all because time travel is just like that. So let's all close our eyes and go to Jesus and say, Jesus, what should I do? What are you asking me to do? And we're back. So you've been there. You've gone to Jesus. Tell me, where did you find Jesus? Did you find Jesus in a dusty Galilean place in the accustomed robes and the sandals on his feet, sitting on a rock, perhaps? Or did you find Jesus as you sat at the base of a cross? Or did you find Jesus in your future? Jesus saying, come, I'm leading you. You're in the present. I'm in the future. Come forward and do what I've shown you to do. Is that where you found Jesus? A Jesus that is living, a living Jesus in your life, not a picture from the past, not a still photograph, but a living Jesus who's beckoning you forward, pulling you ahead, and taking you forward into the future. That is the Jesus that I focus on, that I'd like to talk about. I have a little story to tell you about, I guess it's about a mid-1950s 1950s story, let's say. And it's about a pickle jar. Recognize a pickle jar. They don't exist anymore like that, I don't think. But this is a story about a man who lived in an industrial town. He worked in the mill. All his life, he worked in the mill. It wasn't a great, glorious way to make a living, but it was steady. And he had a son, and when that son came home, the man got out a pickle jar and put it by the bureau in his bedroom. And every night, He'd take the coins out of his pocket and he'd drop them in that pickle jar. And when that pickle jar was pretty empty, the coins would make a really nice clattery noise. And as it got fuller and fuller, they'd clunk in there. And that was his son's first memory, the memory of hearing those coins go into that pickle jar. And all the way as the little boy, Adam, was growing up, he was aware of this pickle jar and the coins in it filling it. And every so often, when the pickle jar got full, his dad would pick up that heavy pickle jar and take it to the kitchen table, and they'd spend a day rolling those coins. And then the next day, the dad would load his son Adam into the truck, and they'd take that shoebox of coins into the bank. And the dad would stand tall, and he'd shove that shoebox across the counter to the teller and say, "This is for my son's education. This is so my son will go to college." And you could tell how proud he was. And then home they'd go, and the first coins would go back into the pickle jar and fill it up again. And in the fullness of time, that young boy went to college, moved away from home, got a job in another town. And he got a girlfriend. And he came home to visit his parents, and he wanted to make a phone call and talk to her. And this was back when there were only landlines. So he went into his parents' bedroom to make a call. And he noticed right away that pickle jar was gone. Of course it was gone. He was fulfilling his father's hopes and dreams. So he called his girlfriend, and he was focused on this pickle jar being gone, and he told her all about how he'd grown up with this and how much it had taught him about his father's perseverance and determination and faith, and how much he remembered, even in the times when his dad was laid off, not a single coin came out of that pickle jar. They'd made do without, because his dad was saving for his future. Well, in the fullness of time again, Adam and his girlfriend got married, and then they came back to visit with a little bundle of joy in their hands and handed it to his parents. And little Jessica cooed and did all the right baby things in the arms of Adam's parents, and then she started to fuss a little. So the wife picked up the baby and said, "I'll just go change her on your bed and I'll be right back." When she came back out of the bedroom, her eyes were a little misty, and she handed the baby over to the grandparents and turned to her husband and said, "Come with me for a minute." And she took him back into that bedroom, and there was that pickle jar right next to the bureau with coins in it for another little baby and for her hopes and dreams. And that's about planning for the future. That's about having hope for the future. That's what God calls us to do, is always look for a better future. We can do that in everything that we do here at Grace. Down in Honduras right now, 18 people, with the support of all of us, are building a better future for a community, for children who otherwise wouldn't have education, wouldn't have good care. I did say that I would include all the passages that we had in the lectionary, and that letter from Paul to the Thessalonians, what he's telling them is, no sitting back, no being lazy. He says, never weary of doing good. Always find something to do. Go home today and make a list of the things that you're going to donate to the food bank next week. Go home today and open your cupboards and get out your baking materials so that you can bake for the bake sale that will bring up the funds in Grace Church that will be used for ministry here in our community and beyond. There are so many things you can do, so many people you can reach out to and smile at and raise their level of hope. Show them that there is a way through, that there is a new creation. Found a great little quote, "Trees and prophets share at least one important characteristic. Both are planted for the future." Well, trees and disciples, trees and us, we are all planted for the future. We aren't going backwards. We're moving ahead, and we know we have the tools to make this a better world, each one of us in our own way. That passage from Isaiah, the new creation, it basically says, talks about the wisdom of God's way, a way of delight and not of weeping, a way of abundance and not scarcity, a way of peace that puts an end to all violence. That's what the new creation is. That's what the vision of hope is that we have. And we have the power and the inspiration and the strength to take action every day to build a better future. It's what we're called to do. And when I was looking for a name for this message, I couldn't get out of my head this poem. It's an ancient Sanskrit poem. My mother taught it to me when I was about 8. She had known it all her life. It was used as a prayer. It's called the Salutation to the Dawn. And every morning, it was part of her ritual. And I'd just like to use it today as a final prayer. "Look to this day, for it is life, the very breath of life. In its brief course lie all the realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty. For yesterday is only a dream, and tomorrow is but a vision. But today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. It starts now. Amen."